want to tell you about a special person from Los Angeles and some special people that he serves. His name is Father Gregory Boyle, and he started something called Homeboy Industries. Anybody heard of that? Los Angeles? Yeah. Oh, good. A lot of you have. So Homeboy Industries is support and training and hope that is provided to former gang members. And Father Boyle very affectionately refers to them as homies, homegirls and homeboys. And they do all kinds of things. They have a homegirl cafe, and they have they make chips and salsa, and they have a bakery, and they have embroidered products and recycling program. And he's created all this because as he started working with the gangs at the parish that he was in, that he was serving, there was a lot of gang activity around him, so he began serving these gang members and realizing that, he said, about 80% of what they really need is just a job. And then 20% is the love and the support and the compassion, and so he's got the right formula down. And so now people all over the world are replicating what he's created because they realize what they were trying to do before just didn't work. He told a story of when he went on Dr. Phil. And by the way, I got to meet him at the Unity Convention, which is where I was last week, and a lot of other people that were really fabulous. It was a really fabulous convention. Before I launch into the Dr. Phil story, I do want to share with you some other people I saw at the conference that you might recognize, actually. Aha, right? So an instant sense of belonging when we connect with people that we have commonalities with, right? So there is Reverend David MacArthur, who you probably know, who served this ministry for 14 years just prior to this. And previously, Max Lafsner, who was here for some time. Yeah, some of you don't recognize Max anymore, but there he is in all his glory. So it was really sweet to connect with them. So today we're talking about belonging, and there's sometimes a natural sense of belonging when we share with each other these commonalities, these roles, and these communities that we share. So I certainly feel that with David and Max, and it was sweet to connect with them. And getting back to Father Boyle and some of the stories that he told, he talked about being on Dr. Phil with some of the homies. And he said, you know, Dr. Phil had spent a lot of money on this set, and he had a coffin there on one side and a jail cell on the other. You know Dr. Phil. And he's telling the guys, you know, you've got two choices. And Father Boyle said he finally just had to say, you know what, Dr. Phil, they got that. They know they got choices that aren't so, attractive. But that's not where it's at. Where it's at is in our kinship. You know, in our belonging. He talks about going to the margins of society so that we can erase them. Understanding, as Mother Teresa said, that what we have forgotten is that we belong to each other. There is no difference, you know? This game that the ego plays of exalting ourselves and then therefore diminishing another, or diminishing ourselves so that others may feel exalted, it's a game. It's a lot of wasted energy. It's not the truth. There was a Zen master who was going to the temple where he served some of his folks, and as he was preparing to go back at the temple, there was a lot of busy work going on. They were scrubbing the walls and the floor and planting flowers and preparing for the great arrival of the master. The trouble for them was he arrived a day early. And so they were really busy and not ready. And he rolled up his sleeves, and he started to scrub the walls with them and scrub the floors. And they said, oh, Master, what are you doing? He said, I'm preparing for the grand day of my arrival. Because the truth is that we are all worthy of that exaltation, right? That's what Father Boyle instinctively understands about these kids, that they've just haven't been given a good head start, and they're just looking for a job, it turns out. It's pretty simple stuff, right? We make it so complicated. He talks about how we have demonized gang members, and of course we have done that with a lot of members of our society in various ways over the many thousands of years we've been in existence. And I'm reading, actually happened to be at the same time reading another book called Feminine Genius by Leanna Silver. Highly recommend it, actually. It's really good. Anyway, she talks about the word demon actually came from the word daemon, which means inner knowing. And at the time that early Christianity was trying to push out pagan ideals, they made inner knowing, daemon, demon, the idea of the evil within. Oh, how wrong we've gotten it, you know? But the truth comes to light. And then we get enlightened. And then we recognize the truth is that the inner knowing that we have been somehow cut off from is exactly the compass we need to know that we belong. The inner knowing is what allows us to know that we belong to Spirit, that we are one with Spirit, that we belong to each other, that we are one with this human family, that we belong to this earth home, that this is our planet, our precious planet, our one and only that we live upon anyway. And that we belong to all of life on it. When we remember that there isn't this otherness, there is a coming home. David White, the poet, said, if I can find his words, I can quote him exactly. Somewhere in here, I will find it. The moment you've uttered the exact dimensionality of your exile, you've already turned toward home. When you utter how you've exiled maybe another or how you've exiled yourself, because we exile ourselves too, you know, we cast out not only members of our society in our minds through judgments, but we also cast out parts of ourselves, don't we? We cast out certain feelings that it's not okay to feel, it's not acceptable, that people don't want to be around our anger or our sadness. And so we keep it hidden, or we numb it out, or we divorce ourselves from it and cast it out. We try to, anyway. It's not really possible. It's still there. It's just suppressed, right? So when I looked at this for myself to say, well, so how? What is the dimensionality of my own exile? What are some things that I have exiled within myself? And I came from the kind of family where it was perfectly fine to express your happiness, but in some unspoken way, I got the message really clear that it wasn't okay to express your sadness and your anger. So those things became exiled in a way. It wouldn't be accept. I wouldn't get the love and acceptance that I needed if those things were expressed. So they were put aside. Anybody relate to this? I know you do. I know this isn't an uncommon story. But looking at that exiling, and the full dimensionality of it, I can look at it and say, wow, there's some serious ramifications that I can point to. There are illnesses in the family that I can see at the root of this casting out of these emotions. And there is that sense of hidden joy, because when we hide our pain, guess what? We hide our joy too, because it's the fullness and the allness of who we are. It all belongs to us. Leanna Silver, the woman who I mentioned, the author of this book, tells a story of she's driving along and her 3-year-old son is in the back seat. And she says, isn't it great when we're in a good mood together? And he says, he's real thoughtful for a moment. She can see him in the rearview mirror. And then he says, I love all the feelings. And she thinks, wow, how did my son zoom light years ahead of me on this one, you know? And so she was thinking about it. How has she raised her son? She said, there's times when he's had temper tantrums and she has done what a lot of us will do, try to tamp it down or hide it or push it away or ignore it or even laugh. I mean, I've been guilty of that with kids, like just with other adults, just kind of laughing because it just seems so outlandish to be that upset that your lollipop is, you know, whatever, got a piece of sand on it, you know, whatever has happened, you know, whatever tragedy has happened. But, you know, that is a tragedy for a 3-year-old. Yeah. And it's think about how pristine this is. It might be the first time they have ever felt anger or sadness. What a strange thing it would be to feel all that energy going through you for the first time. And so she remembers this one time when her son was really upset, and she decided instead of pushing away or tamping down or ignoring or laughing or all those other reactions, that she would walk right into the storm with him. And she said she took him up in her arms and she named the feelings he might be feeling because she saw what happened. She said, when your toy was taken away, did you feel angry and sad? And he kind of pulled away and looked at her and nodded. And she said, where do you feel your feelings? And he pointed to his belly immediately. And then she said, it's a lot of energy, isn't it? And he nodded his head. And she said, do you want me to dry your tears? And he said, no, I want to cry some more. And so he cried some more. And when he was all done, she said, okay, why don't you go tell your friend now, you know, ask your friend to not take your toy when you're still playing with it. And so he went over and told his truth to his little friend, and she said she would not take his toy away when he was still playing with it. This is a great lesson for how we, how to interact with one another, learn from three-year-olds at the toy box. It's how not to disown these parts of ourselves, though. This emotionality, intuitive nature that we have, it's that compass that we need. And so we want to clarify and own and bring into belonging all these pieces of ourselves and each other that we have somehow decided are disposable or discardable. And they're not without consequence. It all belongs to us. So look, I encourage you to look for yourself in the places where your exile is, what you've exiled from yourself or who you have exiled from your life. Look at the full dimensionality of it. Really take in the ramifications of it, in other words. And then decide, do you really want to keep that in exile? Because if your answer is no, or even if your answer is yes, but it's an honest turning toward home. It's an allowing. It's a belonging. It's a wholeness. And that turning toward home is turning back to your heart. So when I looked at this in my own family, I began to get a clarity about these ramifications and then welcome one by one these exiles that I had exiled from my own being. So we see it on the collective level and we see it in the microcosm of each of us. Also at the conference was Sharif Abdullah, who's introducing a program that I hope our church will pilot called Shadow to Light. In this work, he's teaching us not so much working with the individual shadow, but the collective shadow and how it affects us individually. He names the four collective shadows in our society as violence, lack, despair, and other. And so today, obviously, we're focusing a bit on other. But as we come together as a whole, it sort of allows us both to go out to the margins and welcome in those who we have let out and go out to the margins of our own energetic being and welcome in that which we have discarded. Because it all belongs. All of it. All of us. Father Boyle talks about, the homies sometimes get their words confused or sayings confused that we use conventionally. And he said one day a homegirl comes into his office and they call him G. And he said she's real feeling, seems like real proud as she comes in and there's another young person behind her. And she says, hey, G, I want to introduce you to somebody really important to me. This is my sufficient other. I love that because I actually am starting to use it. Hope Renly doesn't mind. And I like it because to me it says, we're enough. You know, there doesn't have to be this constant striving, right? To perfection of whatever that is. Hollywood kind of idea of who we are in relationships. But instead, it's like, I'm enough. You're enough. We're enough. Let's celebrate that with that kind of confidence that homegirl had when she walked into the office, a pride to say, this is my sufficient other. Isn't he or she enough? Aren't I enough? Aren't we enough? Yes. The answer is yes to every one of those questions. And that's part of knowing how we belong to this human family. We are divine and we are perfect in that divinity. Absolutely perfect. Our perfection, our golden perfection. And our perfection is really wholeness. Our perfection is our humanity as well. It all belongs. We all belong. So, you know, sometimes it is through inner work that we find our tribes and the tribes that don't otherize, right? That feel like the place where we belong in a larger family of life. And sometimes it comes just to us by grace, or we get a little sign. I'll call it a belonging bonus. I got one of those when I came to this community a few weeks in. As you can imagine, and maybe you still are kind of trying to feel out the new minister, did we make the right choice? It's okay if you're doing that. Because, you know, I spent some time going, did I make the right choice? Even though I love you guys, and I know that I followed Spirit, and I know I made the right choice, sometimes God just gives us an extra little bonus to say, you really did. And so let me back up a minute and tell you about somebody I know. So I have this very dear friend named Joni, and I just love everything about Joni. She's one of those people that just like looks into your soul when you're talking to her, you know. She's always been a great support for me, and I hope for her. Great laugh, you know, really serious spiritual student. And so anyway, she's just been a really fun friend and very heart-centered soul friend. And a few years ago, she was diagnosed with cancer, and it looked like it was pretty serious. So we lived in different cities, and I went out to stay with her for a week. And while I was there, she kept talking about this very good friend of hers that lives in California, who's a licensed Unity teacher, and how he and his wife had come to visit her. And I thought, why don't I know, you know how we are with our friends, why don't I know about this friend, you know? So I was really surprised to hear about this very good friend who had come and spent some time with her while she was ill, and then she moved to Boston into a hospice situation with her family, and this friend from California came out again. And I was like, oh, it's so intriguing, who is this guy? So I'm sitting with Ron in an early meeting, and he says, you know, you worked at Silent Unity, I'm wondering if you knew Joni. And I went, you couldn't be the Ron and Kay. Oh my gosh, are you the Ron and Kay? And we just had this amazing moment. Almost at the same time said, I miss Joni so much. And it was like the invisible hand of Spirit had reached across to say, you're in the right place. You're with the right people. It is the right time. Thank God for those moments of grace. Let's close out with an affirmation. Together, I belong to Spirit, my human family, and this beautiful blue planet. I am home. So it is.